The Jack B Show, where pit smarts meet street smarts. Now, here's your host, Jack Berusian.
And welcome, everybody. Happy Tuesday to you. Let's call this one April 9th. How about that one? Yes, sir. And we've got a lot of green on the board. Markets working its way towards that upper end of the trading range. Got a lot to talk about here on the Jack B Show. Welcome. I'm Jack Berusian, your host for the next hour. Got a good show for you planned. In fact, got Alan Rohrbach, our good friend, who's going to be making a visit. He'll be on the second segment of the show here, and throughout the rest of the show, he'll be co-hosting. He'll give us his views on what's going on overseas, and better yet, he'll give us his ideas of what's going on in Europe and China, where inflation is slowing. China came out with a report which really seemed to help a little bit, especially with the Chinese markets, and we'll talk a little bit about that later on. But what is going on here with today's trade? Well, it's a combination of a couple of things. Yesterday, I started to talk a little bit about David Tepper. In fact, I got a couple of emails from people saying, Jack, I think you hit the nail on the head again. And I kept saying, David Tepper is one of those guys, to quote the old Smith Barney commercials, you know what I mean? If it was, you know, when, well, I think it was Smith Barney, whoever it was, E.F. Hutton, whatever it was, when they talk, you listen. Well, guess what? When David Tepper talks, I listen. All right? This short little Armenian has his ears out. And, you know, and I am telling everybody to shush because I want to hear what he has to say. And sure enough, what he was talking about is what is happening today. And what was he talking about? Well, what he was talking about was the fact that when you have got central banks doing what we are seeing our central bankers doing, not only here, but across the board. And you know what? It's funny because I talked a little bit about how there are so many naysayers. And the real question is, what if the central banks are right? What if everything they're doing actually makes sense and down the road works? How about that? Wouldn't that be odd? Well, you know, better yet, wouldn't that be strange? I think it'd be more strange. Worse yet, I think it would be very strange if everybody was right about that and the fact that this is going to end badly, like everybody says, okay? There's nobody that says it's going to end well, except for me. I'm starting to think that this is going to end very well. It's going to end with the market significantly higher. It's going to end with a Federal Reserve System in coordination with the Bank of Japan, the Bank of England, the ECB, even the smaller central banks. You know what? The Israeli Central Bank, which did a coordinated effort just so that they could say that they were helping the rest of the world. They're all going to be doing the same thing at the same time, which leads me to believe that there's going to be a coordinated effort to control that inflationary pressure that might come about, or worse yet, contain any kind of recessionary pressure that might emerge from tightening, which will eventually come. Will it come? Well, you betcha. Look, nobody, including myself, thinks that they can go out there and pay $85 billion and buy bonds on a monthly basis, you know, into infinity. It will not happen, folks. In fact, you know, you had some Fed governors that came out, and there was one that spoke a little while ago today talking about the fact that you could see the end of what's going on. You know, one of the things that Ben Bernanke was talking about, and by the way, I want to talk a little bit about Ben Bernanke's speech last night, because what he said yesterday, and it's nobody on TV talked about it at all right? They talked about him speaking, but they didn't mention the guts of what he was speaking about. And what he was talking about, I think in its essence, is what is plaguing the economy. He was talking about loosening up the credit restrictions that many of these banks have in order to issue mortgages. Let's go through that and understand that a little bit, because I think that is one of the reasons why stocks are up this morning, why everything's up this morning, is because of what he said yesterday. We know that the central bank is pushing the inflation button. We know. How do we know that? Well, when you're out there printing up $85 billion a month, you're doing it. You're force feeding it. You're showing it to the world. But the markets haven't been reacting to it. And a lot of that has always been, you know, revolving around the whole idea of this inventory of homes, this overlap that we've had, the home builders and job creation, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, we all know that job creation and home building go hand in hand. You know, you build a home, you sell that home, guess what? You've got a few jobs that are created there between the home builders themselves, between the mortgage bankers, between the bankers. I mean, look, you know, you've got three or four ancillary jobs that are created with every, you know, home that's built, is the way I see it, all right? But the reality is that we have had a seizure in the lower end of the mortgage market. You know, it could be where, I mean, and it was for a long time, that you only got a mortgage if you didn't need a mortgage. All right. I mean, look, you know, what good is having cheap money if you can't get at it? You know, there was somebody who said to me, and it was funny, you know, here was a guy who wanted to refinance his house. He was paying, obviously, way too much as far as interest goes compared to what the interest rates were, and he couldn't get a refinancing. No bank would let him refinance a house, even though he was not late on it. The fact is that because of the fact that he didn't have a steady income, he had what I would consider to be a salesman's income, even though he had never missed a payment, could not refinance that house. Now, many of you are saying, well, Jack, that's why the bank won't refinance it. Well, you know what I'm saying? You, there's no risk with this guy, at least not in my mind. He's never missed a payment in 20 years. Why should I think he's going to miss one now? The reality is that there's more risk in letting them pay a higher mortgage rate, which is exactly what has been happening, unfortunately. And that has been one of the problems that you have seen that's been manifesting itself within the housing industry. That, and of course, the fact that you've got this overlap of inventory, which, by the way, has been soaked up over the course of the last couple of months. Now, let's go all the way back to what Uncle Ben was talking about last night. He was talking about loosening up some of those credit requirements that really manifest themselves within this procedure. When a bank issues a mortgage to you, they take that mortgage and they sell it. Who do they sell it to? Well, they sell it to somebody who securitizes it. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. What was happening and what did happen over the course of the last few years because of the mortgage crisis, all right? And remember, this is in the infinite wisdom of our regulators and our legislators, all right, is that they made it so that if that mortgage did not perform, that company, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, could put it back, give it back in essence, or force it back to the institution that issued it. Well, what institution in their right mind is going to issue a mortgage knowing there's a chance that it's going to get put back on them, all right, at any time, unless, of course, there's no risk whatsoever? A bank's job is not to take on risk. It's to transfer risk to those that make money off of risk. All right, they are an intermediary. So issuing a mortgage, all right, should not be a risk for a mortgage company or a bank that is in the purpose, all right, or in the business of issuing debt for that purpose. So I guess who should take that risk? Well, in my mind, it should be the Fannies and the Freddies who securitize those loans. Do make those procedures tight, but don't make them impossible. Look, it's been very difficult for first-time buyers to go out there and buy homes. I don't have to tell you that. Talk to any first-time buyer. They'll tell you that. Used to be, even though I was paying 13% on my first mortgage, folks. Yes, folks, that's how old I am, 13%. Even though I was paying 13% on that mortgage, I got it immediately. I got it within a week. In fact, they were fighting over me that, you know what, I think somebody offered me 13% because somebody else offered me 13.25%. So I guess the reality is that they could not wait to give me that money when money was that tight. Now money is loose and nobody can get at it. Somebody that I was in that position, if I was in the same position that I was at where I got my 13% loan, folks, right now, they wouldn't loan me a quarter because I'm in a business that gets paid month to month. All right, I'm an entrepreneur. Well, I guess I'm pointing that out to you because that's how things have changed. All right, over the course of the last couple of decades. You know what? They took that amazing pendulum swing to the point where everybody should be a homeowner. And yes, that was the policy that Nancy Pelosi and Barney Frank talked about. And if I remember my politics correctly, it was George Bush and the Republicans who said it was a dangerous policy. There was a speech that was made on the floor of the Senate that actually said that, you know what, not everybody deserves to own a home. That is not the way it works. And that speech was labeled racist. You know what, folks? That I don't remember that senator's name. I'd love to go look it back up. But that senator was absolutely right. Look, not everybody should be a homeowner. We found that out, didn't we? The hard way. Talk to the person who owes $500,000 on a home that he's short selling for $220,000 right now. And there are a lot of them. But I guess my point to that is that now, hopefully, we've learned our lesson that overregulating is not the answer. And what are we seeing? Well, we're seeing that pendulum swinging, folks. It's swinging even under a Democratic liberal president. Even though we're not getting those pro-growth policies, we're starting to get a little bit of the regulation that has been a noose around the neck of certain industries, houses and home building being one of them, all right, starting to loosen up a little bit. It's interesting to see it happen. And that, my friends, is one of the reasons that we're seeing the market doing what it's doing. You're seeing stocks moving to the upper end of the range, all right? And remember, this is also the end of tax selling season. You know, that's the other thing that we always keep in mind and we talk about. The market seems to do the same thing in the first couple of weeks of April. It spins its wheels or goes down a little bit, primarily because nobody wants to commit, knowing full well, all right, that people right now have got redemptions coming in and people don't know what they've got to do with their portfolios. So even those that are smart traders, you know what they do? They usually sit back, they take a deep breath, and they wait to start to see how earnings are coming out. Well, guess what happened yesterday? Earnings started, and they came out, and Alcoa beat the street. The revenue target might have missed a little bit on the top line. I think that was because of the price of aluminum, but their operating margins, folks, beat the street. They're making more money than they were before. Guess what that does to these lowered estimates across the board for earnings? That's right. It changes them, and all of a sudden, the same guy that was going, uh-oh, all right, you know, I've got it wrong, is saying it again. You know what? The same guy that missed this entire rally, that found that this little crack in the armor that I kept saying to you, you know, they're looking for it. They're looking for a chink in the armor. They found it. All right? They found it in the fact that you have got a slowdown. At least that's what they found from coming out of the CEOs. But as I have said to you in the past, and I keep saying over and over again, do not mistake the lowering of expectation season, which precedes every earnings season, for what is reality. That is something that has make-believe. It is actually made up because of the fact that we have got these Sarbanes-Oxley, that whole rule hanging over the market that makes it impossible for CEOs to give us an accurate picture of what is going on. I've said that to you time and time again, and every time the market starts to beat expectations, there's this surprise that hits the street. And to my, I'm in shock. You know, it's for those of you that are old Casablanca friends, fans, it's like Inspector Renault. You remember when he said to him, he's shocked to find gambling going on. And then here's your winnings, sir. You remember that when he pocketed it? That's exactly the way it is. All right? I mean, you know, come on. It should be a very, very simple solution. Now, here, having said that to you, one of the problems that we're going to have over the course of the next couple of weeks is the fact that we have got a market, again, spinning its wheels a little bit, digesting this move, which for a lot of technicians is hard to fathom. You know, and we'll talk a little bit about that with Alan Rohrbach, you know, in the next segment, because Alan's a good technician. But, you know, technicians like when markets move. All right. They like it when they break out. They don't like them a lot of times, especially those breakout guys, especially those trend followers, do not like a market that goes up or down, all right, for 2 weeks straight. And that's exactly what this market's been doing. But on the other hand, and we were talking a little bit about this with Aaron Reinglass, if you remember correctly, the other day with the mayor of the markets, we were talking about how the fact that the market corrects itself in two ways. Either you see it's correct in time or it corrects in price. You know, I remember my old mentor, Bing Sung, always used to tell me, Jack, be afraid. Do not sell a market that's sleeping. And he would say that not only on a daily basis, but he would say that on a monthly basis. He would look at a market that has been sleeping, basically going sideways for a month, and he would say, Jack, my boy, that market's ready to break out. And I would say, why? He'd say, well, two things. One, valuation, because he was always a seeker of value, all right, which is one of the things that we have learned on the show to do, always look for value in the markets. And the other thing was that he saw a market correcting itself in time. Going sideways and actually giving the market a chance to digest the move that it might have just had. Well, folks, this equity market had a fantastic move the first 3 months of the year. Well, you could probably go all the way back to the end of November, really, but let's just stick with this year. That has been a great year for some people, yet it was only 3 months. So what does it do? Well, it gives it a chance to digest. But what happens? What happens? And I guess I'll leave it more of a rhetorical question for you to ponder. If the market does not give that 5 or 7% back, what happens if that portfolio manager sitting in cash, who's bitten his nails down to the bones, all right, cannot get in? What happens if he comes in every day and sees the market higher? You know, I'll tell you what happens. He loses his job. Remember, that's one of the reasons that I keep saying to you, all of that bad news out there, you know what? If you're bullish, you gotta love it, because it's keeping the money on the sidelines and it's keeping the spring in a loaded position, ready to just absolutely explode. You think we've seen the market explode over the course of the first 3 months? What if I said to you, we haven't seen anything yet? Because that could be what happens over the course of the next few months. How about that? All right, let's take a few minutes and then bring Alan Rohr back in, the man with a mission. We'll be right back.
The Jack B. Show will return after a few words from our sponsors.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000, please write down this phone number. It's time to deal with your IRS problems today. Call Certified Tax now for help in all 50 states. Certified Tax's tax attorneys and experts will contact the IRS on your behalf the same day that you become a client. Isn't it time to face your IRS problems? Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 800-570-5115. That's 1-800-570-5115. Again, 800-570-5115.
Hello, listeners. It's Sarah Ritz here. You might know me as Little Miss Market on The Jack B. Show. Don't forget, Capstone Financial School is currently offering a special rate for any consumer education, personal finance, or investing course to our listeners. If you are concerned about your financial future and need help, our 10-hour course will show you how to get the best rates, including credit scores, credit cards, auto loans, student loans, cell phone plans, renting versus buying, and record keeping to investing with low risk, high probability. The school offers a one-on-one consultation. Before entering a class, we will find out what your needs are and how to apply that information to your education experience. Our school admission counselors are available for questions regarding availability, and special rates are being offered. Also, don't forget about our Give a Free Class to a Vet program. For further details, visit our website at www.capstonefinancialschool.com or call 855-411-3232.
When it comes to trading and investing, education is the key to success. But with so many trading schools out there, how do you know which one is right for you? Hi, I'm Greg Hadley, president of Bull & Bear Institute. Bull & Bear Institute was designed by traders for traders. We give you the comprehensive education you need to trade successfully with confidence. Our classes are taught by professional traders with over 100 years of combined experience in the capital markets. Get results. We teach you how to identify price movements and take advantage of it using futures, options, stocks, and ETFs. Develop the knowledge, patience, and discipline it takes to spot the right time to act. Call 855-Y-TRADE or go to bullandbearinstitute.com to sign up for a free subscription to our exclusive newsletter. Flexible day and evening classes are always available. Call 855-Y-TRADE. That's 855-949-8723 or go to bullandbearinstitute.com.
And now back to the Jack B. Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. And, you know, the question is, do you call this the David Tepper market? You know, David Tepper was the world-famous hedge fund manager from Appaloosa Capital Management and is on fire. I got to tell you, I am a big, big fan. And I got to tell you, you know, he said it yesterday again. He came out with some comments. I think he's right on that the world is going to be searching for capital. It's going to be searching for yield. And there's probably no other place to really find it other than U.S. equities. But here to help us answer that question, whether this is the David Tepper market, is maybe we should call it the Alan Rohrbeck market. I don't know. How about that? Is Alan Rohrbeck, of course, he is the founder of Rohr International. You can always get him at Rohr-blog. Not only that, but you're also doing this wonderful venture with the guys from the Bull and Bear Institute, and I know we'll talk a little bit about that in a while.
Sure.
But I want to talk markets with you right away. I want to get right into this. You know, I heard David Tepper saying what he said on TV yesterday. I don't know if you did, but I was very intrigued. I am a big fan. When he speaks, I listen. And he's basically saying that this market's got a lot more to the upside.
So it's an E.F. Hutton market.
Well, it is. Is that what it was? E.F. Hutton?
E.F. Hutton speaks.
When E.F. people listen,
they got bought out by Lehman. Well, so I don't know how much anybody's listening.
You know what? I couldn't remember who it was. I was trying to remember it. I was doing a show yesterday, and I think I said Smith Barney, and then I realized that was wrong. But you're right. It's E.F. Hutton. That's right. But look, I guess the question is this. Do you see that happening, number one? Number two, I've heard from technicians, especially those that are trend followers, that this is a nightmare market. All right? You, on the other hand, love it. And you're a technician. So tell me why it's a nightmare for some people and not a nightmare for others.
Well, we've discussed this a lot, Jack. That's an excellent question. And before I get into that, I like the discussion from the first segment about the difference between money supply and money velocity. The lack of
Absolutely.
People getting those loans, there's no velocity. The Fed is just making sure everyone thinks there's plenty of money out there. It gives a lot of background comfort, but it isn't going to cure the economy
well,
in its own right.
Since we're talking about it, I think that's one of the big things in the speech yesterday, and that was taken away for at least by me, and I'm hoping that the world catches on to that, because you know you're going to see those that securitize mortgages take that as a sign that they can go out there and not have to worry about putting back non-performing loans.
Right, and that's that, and there's the two other things, one of which reinforces that, the other which works contrary to it, but the second one is not so meaningful because it probably doesn't have any chance of coming about. The first is, let's not forget that as Europe has weakened, all these very righteous people in Europe about, oh, those banks, the terrible American banks, and they created the problem and higher capital requirements, all of a sudden you've got Spanish, Portuguese, you know, and other banks, Italian banks, etc., all suffering. Oh, those Basel III rules. Maybe we can delay those by about a year and a half or two years.
To, you and I know they have to delay them. They've got no choice.
They've done it already.
They have no choice.
So, and who are always, as you noted about the big push for everybody to own a home, even people who really couldn't afford it, which is a big part of the problem that was driven by the U.S. government. So who's in here talking about capital requirements that have been boosted up to 9 or 10%? That is huge historically, but the U.S. Congress, with a new bill to say, we want to make doubly sure these banks don't cause a problem. There's actually a bill in Congress now, no chance of passing, just to be clear for our audience, about raising the capital reserve requirements to 15%. And it's like, once again, proving they're members of the I don't have a clue society.
Yeah. You know what? 15%, folks, just so you understand what that means. That means that these banks will not issue any more mortgages.
That's it. Loans of almost any type.
Right.
Forget it.
You know, it's one of the reasons, if you notice that, and I was saying this before, remember when I was talking about how the institutions were raising capital and wanted to make sure that they were cash rich going into this period. This might unleash that cash, Alan. You know what I mean? Remember, these institutions have been waiting to basically have the green light to be able to go out there and put that money back to work rather than be sitting on it, waiting for the regulator to come and tap them on the shoulder for that Basel III check. So, I'm glad you brought that up, because that could be one of the catalysts that, you know, drove the market today, and I think down the road can drive the market significantly higher. But speaking of that, give me your, you know, let's comment on the
back
second.
Back to your original question, yes. And I think the question of whether technicians are having problems with this market or whether they are doing fairly well is something we've discussed at some length. And any good mentor or educator on the markets would also make sure people are clear about. And that is the scope of your analysis. And what do we mean by that? We mean, what time frame are you analyzing and what types of indicators you're using. In other words, how you define the trend. Now, people who define the trend in the very short term, they're trying to look for the 2-, 3-, 5-day swing. The markets have been erratic. They've either been standing still, or you get these big gap openings like we had on Friday off the employment report, or you have the big downdraft we had Wednesday off the ADP.
These are the employment. Ones. These are the technicians that are having trouble, is what you're going through.
They're having trouble because
I talked to a couple and I'm not a technician really. I look at numbers, but they've basically been telling me it's their nightmare. It's their worst nightmare because the market's doing exactly the opposite almost every time they need to go in and do something.
And what it specifically is doing on short-term trend indications, because first it's in a trading range and then it jumps, it gaps, Mark, significantly. We've seen a lot of that over the past, you know, quite a bit since late last year, but even we can say in the first quarter of the year, even Friday, big gap lower, market looks terrible, spends all day rallying. Well, that's not something that's easy for short-term systems to interpret. Now, if you're looking at a longer-term view, as you and I have discussed quite a few times over the past month or so since the market gapped above 1,525 to 30 area when the March S&P was still the lead contract back on March 5th. We said, well, any sell-offs back down to or even near 1,530 to 25 are basically breaks to support unless the market violates 1,525. What happened on the Cyprus crisis? 1,532 low.
Yep.
What happened on the employment report?
By the way, just to give him kudos, you know who gave us 32 as an over-under number was our good friend.
The mayor of the markets.
Was the mayor of the markets.
Was Aaron.
Gave us, in fact, he said 32 is the number.
Well, and that's right.
Which he called it, and he was right, yeah.
And that substantially, he looks at patterns on charts as well. That might have to do with that gap on March 5th.
You know, you heard what I was saying. What if the market doesn't give you that 5 to 7% break? You know, this market only seems to pull back 2% at a clip. You notice that?
Yes.
And 2% is one of those magic numbers that a runaway bull pulls back and never gives anybody a chance to get into. I mean, it almost feels like it's one of those types of chart patterns developing. Are you seeing any of that?
Well, that's a very good question. Where I am seeing it is the degree to which the market softened up late last week, first Wednesday at midweek, and then into Friday, and it finished back below that classical weekly oscillator level at 115 points over. This is for the S&P future, the weekly indication on the 41-week average versus the current price, and especially, of course, the weekly close, because that's when the indicator gets locked in on each chart. And last week, it did end up back below 115 points over. It was down about 103 over. And that made, as we speak, Jack, literally, that made the level back up at around 1,562 to 65, where the market did quite a bit of work last Monday, Tuesday, before it got hit on
Wednesday. It's a logical place for it to have resistance.
It's a logical place for it to have resistance. And here we are back above 1,565. It's saying, well, that was a reaction. But now the market, if it's going to stay out more than 115 points over, let's say generally later this week stays above 1,565, it can extend to that next threshold again that looks more like as high as maybe 140 over, or generally speaking, up toward 1,590, and that's no small move. That's $25 higher.
Is right within striking range
and
here.
That gets back to why the short-term technicians are having problems. They are getting drawn in to the seeming trend reversal on the signals, and then the market reverses back the other way too quickly for them to make money.
I like it. In fact, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to take a break here, and when we come back, what I want to do is I'm going to ask Alan why the other technicians seem to be doing well in this market. Now that we know why some of these trend followers are getting chopped up, and that's the word, by the way, that we use on the floor of the exchange, getting chopped up. There are others that are doing well. How about that? Don't go away. I got a lot more coming for you right here on The Jack B. Show.
The Jack B. Show will return after a few words from our sponsors.
Are you working harder than ever at your job, but find yourself getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our free information, you can lead a happier life, work from home, and start earning money as soon as next week.
I was a traditional business owner, and our business was affected greatly by the economy, so we were looking for another income stream. It allowed me to actually walk away from a 16-year career and part owner in a traditional business just after 8 months.
Go to freedom27.com, get out of the rat race, work from home, and start earning great money as soon as next week.
I'm a single mom. Before this business, I was over $90,000 in credit card debt alone. And now we go to Disneyland, Disney World. We've been on vacations to Hawaii. I never could have done that before, this business.
Go to freedom27.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 27.com. Freedom27.com and start earning great money as soon as next week.
Hey folks, Jack Barugin here, host of The Jack B. Show. One of the questions that people ask most often is, how do you learn about the markets? Well, the people at the Bull and Bear Institute have probably one of the best course curriculums that I have ever come across to teach people about the capital markets. With over 100 years of combined experience, their staff brings a wealth of information to each and every Bull and Bear Institute course. So whether you're trading futures, options, stocks, ETFs, whether you're thinking about trading them, whether you have your money with a registered investment advisor, I would highly recommend that you go out there and learn exactly what is going on. These are classes that are both live and online, AM and PM. So do yourself a favor, folks. Contact these people and understand what is going on in your financial world. Again, the Bull and Bear Institute, 855-Y-TRADE. That's 855-Y-TRADE, 855-949-8723.
If you owe the IRS more than $10,000, please write down this phone number. It's time to deal with your IRS problems today. Call Certified Tax now for help in all 50 states. Certified Tax's tax attorneys and experts will contact the IRS on your behalf the same day that you become a client. Isn't it time to face your IRS problems? Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 800-570-5115. That's 1-800-570-5115. Again, 800-570-5115.
And now back to the Jack B. Show.
Hi, welcome back, everybody, to the second half of the Jack B. Show, where we've got Alan Rohr back, and we are engaging in what the late Irv Kupcinet used to call the lively art of conversation. That guy I used to love watching and listening to Irv. See, for those of you that are not Chicagoans, none of you got that. But you know what? I know Alan knows who Irv Kupcinet is. You know, I'm looking at a market here, Alan, and you know what? It seems like a tale of two markets. All right? And, you know, you were saying something in the break that I want you to share with the listeners. You know, you said that the bonds are reacting off of global events, and you've got the market, stock market, reacting to what is a domestic, I guess, you know, global growth story, which is really taking advantage of other things. Give us your take on that, and then maybe morph into what you see happening in China and in Europe, because all of that is really affecting, I think, what's going on right now, which is that tale of two markets. You know, I've got a 174 10-year, and I've got a market up near its highs.
It's a tale of two markets squared.
Yeah,
because there's
it?
Actually two different markets in equities between Europe and, let's say, the U.S. and Japan, where you have the most aggressive quantitative easing, true quantitative easing, not just backstopping. The Japan has exploded lately. Now that
the central bank there is talking about buying stocks. I mean, let's call it what it is. We're talking about real, true asset inflation that they're trying to trigger.
And even the degree to which they're buying bonds is now on an equal amount in local terms to what the Fed is doing here, except they have an economy one-third the size of ours.
That's amazing.
So it's huge, the amount of QE they're putting in, and it's showing in terms of, well, like you said, currency depreciation. They want to depreciate the currency. Creates a real conundrum. Our friends Ira Harris and Rick Santelli had a segment on Santelli, I think it was yesterday, on Monday, that was fascinating because they said they're underpinning their bond market with all this purchasing, but that's at a 50 basis point, folks, a 0.5% yield. But they're doing it, they say, to try and stoke a 2% return, 2%, you know, 2% inflation. And it's like, well, how much do you want to hold 0.5% bonds if inflation is going to be 2%? But for now, it seems to be working. More importantly, your question, Jack, about the difference between what you'd normally expect and what we're actually getting in the stocks versus bond relationship. And the stocks are trading off, again, this anticipation of continued significant QE, even though some governors here and there at the Fed talk about ending it a bit sooner. But the bonds are trading off the real-world news, and the real-world news is just not good. The NFIB, Small Business Optimism Index, was supposed to be up slightly from 90.8 today, and instead it dropped down to, I've got it right here.
I did mention that yesterday for the listeners. I said to watch that. Yeah,
89.5. And they're saying no chance they're doing any hiring. That's one of the main things that's going to suffer because of all of these headwinds we've discussed before.
Yet the market rallied today. I mean, and we see it rallying like this.
Except it did not rally in Europe. The DAX was lower. And this is the difference. I said that your dividing point, keep an eye on this, is ECB is going to backstop and require austerity to put money out there. Fed, the Bank of Japan especially, to a lesser degree, the Bank of England, where the UK stock market, the FTSE also, isn't doing great. It didn't recover from the sell-off last Friday. anywhere near as well as we have. It's certainly back down well below technical support.
We are seeing the currencies bouncing back, though. You're seeing the euro back up over 130. You're seeing British pound back up over 153. I mean, you know, it's you're getting a little bit of bounce there. We're not getting the free fall in those currencies.
That's consistent with exactly what we're discussing, which is the Fed, to a great degree, the Bank of Japan, to an even greater degree, are depreciating their currencies to try and stoke a sense of economic growth.
What about inflation, though? I mean, I know they're trying to force-feed inflation. China came out, said their inflation numbers were down. It's one of the reasons that we saw the markets, I think, react well to that. I mean, I'm looking at just about every commodity across the board doing well. You know, when I say well, better than it was doing, I guess, you know, over the course of the last few weeks. So I guess the real question is that going to be the canary in the coal mine? I think we've always been talking about it. And, you know, and are we still a far way, you know, I mean, is it a long ways down the road before we worry about inflation?
Yep, it sure is. Basically what we have is a situation where you're still not going to see inflation. Real inflation is demand pull inflation. That means that you have wages outpacing the growth in GDP. Well, you're just not going to have that. The jobs market is still too weak to get real inflation, ingrained inflation, where people start asking for raises because labor is tight.
Well, that's an important point, Alan. I mean, and let's stick on that for a second here. Wage inflation, all right, is so much different than price inflation.
Exactly. I mean, price inflation has a limit because of weakness in final demand if wages aren't also strong.
If prices go up high enough, then you see demand, you know, destruction, basically,
sure,
is what
exactly.
You're saying. Just like it is with gasoline or anything else.
Right.
Whereas wage, now give me your take on wage inflation. Why is that much more dangerous for the economy?
Well, because wage inflation only takes place usually once the economy is growing strongly enough where you run into real shortages, not of high-tech labor. You hear businesses rightfully complain here. We don't have the sort of highly trained technical workers. Highly skilled labor. Wage inflation normally only takes place once you get the average laborer being able to demand more because the economy is so strong, businesses are thriving, and they're going to pay up for your average level of worker.
Does that go back to your Obamacare argument? I mean, and not to pull two different topics and segments into one another, because we had talked about that, I remember, last week. But is that the heart of the Obamacare argument, is that it is stopping those very jobs from being created?
Well, yeah. In a nutshell, that's it. And just to extend that, you are also diminishing the earnings of people who are full-time being put back to part-time. You're raising the cost for people who are being left at full-time but being told their family is no longer going to be covered under the company group healthcare plan.
So do we want to see a little bit of wage inflation? I guess, is that a good thing over the course of the next couple of months?
Jack, you got to put the cart back behind the horse. Do we want to see enough economic growth to create real demand for labor?
Yeah, you know what?
That's what we're talking about.
You are so right. It's the chicken before the egg, Alan. But you know what? I think that when I see and hear our Federal Reserve doing what they're doing, and I see our regulators and our legislators doing what they're doing, you know what? There are times where I scratch my head and I go, does anybody know what anybody is doing? I mean, period. Only because it feels to me as if that there's this bifurcation in philosophy. You know, on the one hand, you know, they think they know what they want to do. On the other hand, they're only doing it, you know, in a very, I guess, a very, very, very inefficient way. That is probably the most diplomatic way for me to be able to say this.
You mean the government laying their hands on the money first and them spending it or directing how it gets spent? Well, isn't it efficient? It's free market capitalism?
You know what? Just
shocking. I'm back to Inspector Renault. I'm shocked.
You're shocked to find gambling going on here? Yeah, you know what? And for me, just, I guess, only because we lost the iron woman yesterday, the Iron
Age. May she rest in peace.
You know what? And you know what? She would have been laughing about it right now because she knew where socialism led. All right, we're going to be right back and finish
it. The Jack B. Show will return after a few words from our sponsors.
Attention business owners and individuals who owe the IRS. Do you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes? You need aggressive representation. Call Certified Tax now and speak to one of our tax attorneys, enrolled agents, or tax professionals who specialize in tax liens, back taxes, tax debt, wage garnishment, and collections. We won't waste your time. Instead, we'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. And you can become a client right now. We've settled millions of dollars in tax issues for a fraction of the cost. Find the peace of mind knowing the IRS will not be knocking at your door. Protect your home, business, and family today. We know the tax laws, and we act fast. Call today for your free, no-obligation consultation. 1-800-560-3420. Remember, we'll be on the phone with the IRS within 30 minutes of you becoming a client. That's guaranteed. Call Certified Tax at 800-560-3420. That's 800-560-3420. Again, 800-560-3420.
Hello, listeners. It's Sarah Ritz here. You might know me as Little Miss Market on The Jack B Show. Don't forget, Capstone Financial School is currently offering a special rate for any consumer education, personal finance, or investing course to our listeners. If you are concerned about your financial future and need help, our 10-hour course will show you how to get the best rates, including credit scores, credit cards, auto loans, student loans, cell phone plans, renting versus buying, and record keeping to investing with low risk, high probability. The school offers a one-on-one consultation. Before entering a class, we will find out what your needs are and how to apply that information to your education experience. Our school admission counselors are available for questions regarding availability, and special rates are being offered. Also, don't forget about our Give a Free Class to a Vet program. For further details, visit our website at www.capstonefinancialschool.com or call 855-411-3232.
Are you working harder than ever at your job, but find yourself getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our free information, you can lead a happier life, work from home, and start earning money as soon as next week.
I was a traditional business owner, and our business was affected greatly by the economy, so we were looking for another income stream. It allowed me to actually walk away from a 16-year career and part owner in a traditional business just after 8 months.
Go to freedom27.com, get out of the rat race, work from home, and start earning great money as soon as next week.
I'm a single mom. Before this business, I was over $90,000 in credit card debt alone. And now we go to Disneyland, Disney World. We've been on vacations to Hawaii. I never could have done that before this business.
Go to freedom27.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom27.com. Freedom27.com. And start earning great money as soon as next week.
Jack Marugin here. Most of you recognize me from the floor of the CME. There are a lot of trading schools out there, but I found one that actually works. The Bull & Bear Institute has the best curriculum to teach you about the capital markets, whether it's the basics of investing, intermediate or advanced trading techniques using stocks, options, ETFs, futures, and Forex. BBI has it all. So call the folks at the Bull & Bear Institute at 855-Y-TRADE. Tell them Jack B sent you and get 50% off that first course. Again, that's 855-Y-TRADE, 855-949-8723.
And now back to the Jack B Show.
And welcome back, everybody, as we wrap it up here for this Tuesday. As a programming note, tomorrow on the open market segments that we do with the CME, we're going to have the second place finisher in the World Cup Trading Championship. Archie Mai, nice guy, all the way from Hong Kong. So it was really cool. The winner, again, as I said yesterday, was from Italy, the second place finisher from Hong Kong. And next week I'll be doing an interview with the third place finisher, who is from South Dakota. So it's, again, a very interesting group of top three finishers, and it's always fun doing those interviews. So please tune in tomorrow again at the open market segment at the CME Group. Lot going on, Alan, and we're talking with Alan Rohrbach, who's been our guest host here for the last three segments or so. And Alan, I'm looking at a market that is number one, confused, and we were talking a little bit about that before we left the last segment, because I've got these short-term, I guess, trend followers that are just having heart attacks trying to trade the market. But explain what traders are doing that are technicians that are doing right, if you don't mind.
Well, the people who generally speaking, there's different scopes of analysis. So I also have had certain points where I've said they look toppy, and I have short-term indications. I look at indications also on 60-minute and 30-minute charts, and I say, well, they're up against one of my bigger areas, and they're looking toppy. It tells me when I might get that, well, is what is no longer 3 to 5% pullback. Like you said, Jack, you had 1.5% or 2%.
Yeah.
That's it. But I get that. But then I also see once they bottom, the question is when you get a shorter-term topping signal, you step back then into your intermediate term trend view. And Jack, you and I have discussed this. You've seen me do this on quite a few occasions where if they don't break the next lower support on a good size sell-off, previously it used to be $40 to $50 sell-offs in the S&P, like after the election last
year.
That's
right.
Where'd they get to? They got to 1383. It was like, okay, this is where the bears, sometimes at the bottom of a break, you only get to the point, like Aaron mentioned last week, or over the last couple of weeks, the Cyprus crisis, again last week. If they only get down to where the support is, you see a market break 40 or 50 bucks. You see it break 30 bucks, and the perverse part of it is then you say, okay, now the bears have got them down to where they actually have to get the job done. They must break the support. So the more enlightened technicians, yes, we look at short-term indicators. We monitor the short-term swing, but some people, they see that much of a sell-off, they go, oh, this must be the start of something bigger. You have to know where those intermediate-term levels are, where the market is either going to break from a break on a sell-off, or it's had a break, but if it doesn't get below it, it's not going to break anymore.
How many views do you give yourself when you're looking at the markets and you're trying to gauge, I guess, where you think the market's going? Do you give yourself three views, five views?
That's an excellent question. And it's not the number of views. It's exactly what we just discussed. And what you're doing is you're setting a frame of reference for our public audience.
Yes.
About, well, how does all that work? You analyze markets top down, meaning big picture. I look at monthlies. I look at where they are in the big picture. I look at longer term trends on weeklies, longer term averages. I move down to the intermediate term. Once I know what the setup is from the longer term, intermediate term, shorter term indicators on weekly charts, and then daily charts. And when I see, oh, where does that tell me the key levels are? And that's where you get levels like 15, 30 to 25 in the S&P. That's where before that, we had the levels down at 1485.90 that told us as of the early part of this year, the market was getting good again already because it was above it right away.
Are these the major convergences? Do you have that where you look at it?
Absolutely.
I was going to say, there's got to be a time where you're looking at a monthly, a weekly, a daily, and all of a sudden you're looking at it and you're going, oh my goodness, because this is about to happen.
What I, in fact, refer to as confluences of indicators. It's metaphorically just like the tributaries of a river where several come together at once to really increase the flow of the river. It's called a confluence of the streams. Intellectually, indicator-wise, when you have things on the weekly, like that bigger oscillator we look at, segueing into some levels that have set up on the daily, then I look down to the hourly and 30-minute charts. When you get one level or a narrow range, it's often more like a $2 or $3 range in the S&P where all these things come together. You go, well, I don't know exactly what they're going to do, but I know where to look to say what they should be doing at certain points. And what I will say now is that, you know, we are, again, up to this, through this 1562 to 65 area. I'd watch that closely the next couple of days because I know you, in addition to that, and by the way, even if it sells off, if it doesn't get the initial support now below it is where it tried to leave the down break last Friday on a daily chart trend line. And that fits in with some previous congestion. Again,
that's
multiple
good stuff,
indicators,
Alan.
15, 47 to 45. But you know, what's coming up?
I was about to say that. I know we've got about a minute here, a minute and a half left, I should say. I've got the FOMC minutes tomorrow. For me, I'm going to be looking at those carefully. And I also have a Fed governor speaking, Karachkova, whatever it is.
Right.
I, you know what? I mutilate his
Kosher
name.
Kosher Lakota.
Yeah, I mutilate his name all the time. But anyway, what do you see happening?
Well, actually, tomorrow is a very cluttered day before you get to FOMC minutes because you have the OECD composite leading indicators. And I always tell folks, this is a six-month forward view that actually, because they come out with it on a two-month delayed basis, it's about a four-month forward view that's often very good.
We're looking for an uptick on this thing, I think, aren't we?
Because on OECD composite, it's been, you used the term before, bifurcated to an extreme degree. They're showing Europe still has problems. The U.S. is in good shape. Great Britain, it says, is coming back better than you would expect from the surface level data. But then again, industrial production there was a bit less bad than we expect today. But importantly, you not only have Kosher Lakota tomorrow, you've got Lockhart speaking on financial stability. And after you get the minutes, you got Fisher, one of the permahawks, speaking on monetary policy. That would be out into approximately 4 o'clock in the afternoon our time. But also a lot of data the rest of the week. You've got important data out of Japan, Australian employment. This is on Thursday. And Thursday continues with the Plosser speaking. And also, it, most importantly, from my standpoint, as to is it finally backlashing the headwinds from Obamacare and the like, is it finally backlashing into the real economy? U.S. retail sales on Friday.
Well, you know what? I gave you credit. I gave you credit yesterday, and I said that it was something that we had to watch because you made sure that we had to watch it.
This is important.
And I know it's an important number, but for me, I think that it's going to be key to see how the markets react. That, and of course, it's earnings season. As we, you know what, want to remind all our listeners out there, remember, you are going to see not only earnings starting to come out, but more importantly, expectations for what could be, you know, a very big surprise this quarter, Alan. How about that? I think it could be a...
I liked your initial discussion of Sarbanes-Oxley psychology. They all talk it down now.
Isn't it amazing?
Prone to upside surprises.
All right. For Alan Rohrbeck, I'm Jack Berugian. Again, we'll be with you tomorrow, where we'll have the mayor of the markets on. We'll be talking to you then.
Views and opinions expressed in the preceding program are not necessarily those of this radio station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult the appropriate advisor before making any financial decisions. All rights reserved.